from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Coming up next on Forum this morning, for people with difficult-to-pronounce names, a common reaction when they introduce themselves is a quizzical look and maybe a follow-up question. How do you say that again? Well, studies show that the way we pronounce our names can actually shape how people see us and even affect our ultimate success in life. Ethnic names are sometimes changed or Americanized or replaced with nicknames, raising questions about how that affects a person's identity. And what impact does this ultimately have on the person who changes their name and on the culture as a whole? Forum is next, right after this. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Good morning and welcome to another hour of this morning's Forum program. According to a study published in the Journal of Experimental Sociopsychology, the easier it is to say a person's name, the better their chances for success in the workplace, and the faster they are likely to be promoted. Those with simple names also have greater success in making new friends. What does it mean to have a name difficult to pronounce, and how much of an effect do difficult-to-pronounce names engender? And what of the effect on identity of changing one's name or anglicizing it? We're going to take all this up in this second hour of Forum and more. And with us in studio, we want to welcome Ritha Kohli, who is former assistant professor in elementary education at San Jose State University. She'll be starting as assistant professor at UC Riverside in the fall. And good morning to you.
Good morning.
We're also going to be connecting with Ritha Basin, who is a people strategist and diversity specialist with Basin Consulting, and also the founder of an app called Mavoco, which we will tell you about as the hour progresses. But let me begin, Ritha Kohli, with you. I mean, some of this is a bit overwhelming, I must tell you. I mean, just in the sense of what some of these studies have shown. For example, The Economist did an article about this, said 14% more earnings for those who have Americanized or anglicized names, and real job disadvantage for those who don't. I mean, this is kind of hard to get your mind around, that it's that glaring and that conspicuous of a problem.
Yes, I mean, I think part of the work that I do is to look at racial hierarchies that exist in schools and the racialized experiences of students of color, and names being one part of that. And so I think even this framework that some names are difficult to pronounce, we have to ask that question: difficult for whom to pronounce? And so really understanding that we are operating in a system that privileges Western or Eurocentric names, and how that has an impact. It starts as early as children's sometimes first experience in school, and sometimes even earlier than that. When I was pregnant with my first daughter, I was in a birthing class, and they asked what I was going to name my daughter. And when I said the name Asha, the teacher said, "Oh, all these new names these days. Why can't people name kids like Lizzie and Bob?" And you know, but for me as a South Asian woman, this name is very
part of your cultural heritage.
Part of my cultural heritage.
And this, does present a problem for many people. It's why I think in the Chinese households, it's common for kids to have a name in their home and then a name outside, which is much more of an Americanized name. It gets us into that whole difficult problem of what kind of impact this has on identity. You know, if you have to shift or get a nickname and be called Skip or whatever, and your name is something culturally quite different than that. But also the mispronunciation names. I mean, kids will tell you they don't know how to say my name, and the teachers in the elementary school level or mm-hmm. even before that in pre-K and so forth, and it bothers them.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think, you know, when you come from your home and your parents, they don't just, you know, when you think about how your parents named you or how I've named my children or how many people around the world, there's so much thought and care and meaning that goes into those names. And when you're sending your kid to school, they're not just carrying their name, they're carrying their family, their ancestors, their history with them. And they come into the space, and when the teacher or the school doesn't treat that name with care, they're essentially dismissing all of those things that come along with that name. And so it's not just about giving them a nickname to make your life easier. There's a lot of consequences that come along with that as well.
And let's bring Rithu Basin on. I think we have her by phone now, again with Basin Consulting and with Mavoko, which, as I said, we'll find out more about. Welcome to the program. Glad to have you.
Thank you so much for having me.
I guess one of the things I'd like to ask you, you're called a diversity specialist. There are some who would argue that maybe companies especially get some traction these days, or there's an advantage in having diversity, ethnic diversity. And yet all of these studies seem to show that those with difficult names and with what may be ethnically diverse names actually suffer and don't make as much in wages.
That's certainly what the data is establishing. It's interesting because I would say that in all the areas of talent management that organizations are addressing, that looking at names and the impact of your name, both how it's spelled and how it is pronounced, or more importantly, the challenges in pronouncing your name, can have an adverse impact on your career advancement. That's a blind spot. I'd say that it's only now increasingly that organizations are tuning into this. And what we know from the research, as you've alluded to, is that it can have a profound impact on how it is that you advance. And so it's great to be in a place where we're having this dialogue today.
Well, you were bullied as a kid because of your name, I believe, weren't you?
That's right. I call it the great misfortune of having Star Wars coming out right when I started grade one. And so while all the other kids in my class were excited about R2-D2 and the rest of the cast, I was tormented because my name, Rithu, which then was being pronounced the anglicized way, Rithu, was very similar to R2-D2. So I spent, I'd say, almost 20 years being called R2-D2 in various forms, and which is an interesting experience in and of itself, because the correct pronunciation isn't Rithu, it's Rithu. But I was young, my parents were newer to the country, and we just let it slide that people were anglicizing the pronunciation. It's only recently that I have reclaimed the Indian pronunciation, and more importantly, that I've been able to shed the bad bullying names that I had as a child.
Well, talk about where this led you. You've got kind of a name bank now, an app called Mavoko, which I alluded to earlier, and the idea is to really help people pronounce names correctly.
That's right. So I'm a lawyer by training, and I spent a few years practicing law, and then I transitioned into a legal talent management role at a global law firm. And I had noticed both in my own experience going through corporate North America with a harder-to-pronounce name, how it was having an impact on me. But it wasn't until I was in the trenches of doing HR talent management that I saw repeatedly patterns around how when your name is harder to pronounce, people are less likely to hire you, want to work with you, come up to you in social settings, come up to you as you're walking down the hallway, because if they have to remind you how to pronounce if I have to remind you for the fourth time what my name is, or more importantly, how to pronounce it, you're going to feel badly, so you'll likely avoid me. And so I was starting to see patterns around that. A few years ago, I launched my first social enterprise, which is a consulting firm. But one of the things I had in the back of my mind is I will come up with a technological way to address name mispronunciation, which is how Mivoco was launched. And so the whole premise behind Mivoco, which is a play on Mi Voce or My Voice, is it's a name pronunciation application helps individuals and companies, organizations, address the social and business issues that arise with name mispronunciation. And so you go to mevoco.com, you record your name in your own voice, and we have an emphasis on it being in your own voice because people pronounce their names differently. Not everyone says Rithu or Rithu. You could also say Rithu. So I want for people to be able to teach others how to say their name in their own voice. And then you get a link to your name, and you can cut and paste it anywhere online or offline.
Well, this is great advertisement for you, but this is kind of a LinkedIn for names. I'm wondering, in fact, as someone who's been involved in this enterprise, what kind of advice you would give to people, particularly when they work with a colleague whose name is difficult for them to pronounce?
Well, you know, it's so interesting. I do a lot of leadership training, and I was at an organization just yesterday, and they had their summer associates join. And one of the associates came up to me afterwards and she said, my name is X, and she has a name that her parents immigrated to the country. It's a harder to pronounce name, but certainly when you look at it on paper, it's challenging to figure out how to say it. And she said, I'm noticing repeatedly that people are starting to learn my name. It's impacting my work already. We've been here for a few weeks, and I don't know what to do. What should I do about it? So I told her about Mi Vocal, but more importantly, what I think is important is this idea of, well, there's two pieces to this challenge. One, I have the hard to pronounce name. What do I do? And then there's the, I'm working, living, and socializing in an increasingly global environment, and all day long, I'm coming across names to pronounce, what do I do? And I guess there's two things that I would suggest here. For the people who have hard to pronounce names, while it feels unfair for us, and I'm sure many of your listeners today can relate to this, because I have to do this all day long where I'm correcting people on how to say my name, we need to ensure that we stand in the power of our personal and cultural identity and teach others how to say their name, how to say our names properly. And so that's what I do. I'm lovely about it, but I will repeat the pronunciation of my name until people say it correctly or almost correctly. Like, I'm good. If you've got it 35% down and you're trying, I'm good with that, as opposed to someone repeatedly saying it wrong and not trying to correct it. So I think that's incumbent upon us to correct others. But then also, we're dishing it out as well. All day long, I'm meeting people whose names are harder to pronounce. And I think it's also incumbent upon me in our global world where we're trying to be inclusive and we're trying to build great one-on-one relationships to make sure that I follow up and am sensitive to someone's name pronunciation, so that if I don't have it right, I should repeatedly ask, did I say it right? Sorry, would you think saying it again? And then what I personally do is, in my smartphone, in under the section, I'll phonetically spell out someone's name once they've told me, and I'll look at it before I call them or before I see them to refresh my memory. If they're not in the Mi Vocal database.
Well, let me go to Aretha Coley. Would you agree with this? I mean, in terms of advice that you would give, say, elementary level school teachers?
Well, I think that there are several factors that I think that teachers need to engage with, because part of it is, you know, schools are meant to serve kids. Schools are places where parents are trusting schools to treat their kids with care and make sure that they're safe. And oftentimes, because of names, as in the experience that Ritu is talking about right now, it's not a safe place. My brother himself went through many experiences like this where it didn't feel safe for him, where he was teased extensively for his name and renamed. And so we did the study where many, many students, people reflected on their experiences in K-12 education, where as students, they were ridiculed, their names were changed, teachers who didn't know how to say their names would laugh at their names, and it created a lot of shame for them and a lot of burden for them. And so part of this is that these are not just individualized experiences. This is not a new phenomenon that comes from recent diversity. This practice of renaming has been going on since the inception of our country. So we talk about slaves. When people were brought in slavery, they were renamed the name of their masters. When indigenous...
They still talk in the African-American community sometimes about calling somebody out a name, which means you don't pronounce their name right, you don't say their name right. I remember Diana Ross was called up, I think it was during maybe a Grammy or Oscar, by somebody who called her Dina Ross, and she said she was called out a name and she was quite exercised about
it. And I think names are very personal for in communities of color for that reason as well. I mean, indigenous schooling, you have the renaming practices in many Latino communities in the Southwest. They were renamed. Spanish names were renamed to Anglicized names. And so this is not a new phenomenon. This is something that's historical. And so when
you have a name for it, don't you? You call it microaggression.
Yes. So racial microaggressions are subtle, everyday forms of racism. They are layered. They aren't always race-based. They intersect with language and gender and sexual orientation, geography, and they're cumulative. So it may be something that you feel is just a joke, or it was just a passing comment. But when you hear it every day or all the time, over and over again, you start to internalize that this is an issue, that you are the problem, that you are feeling othered, right?
You internalize it, yeah. Well, our intern, Mariam Jamil, actually interviewed a number of people who have encountered stumbling blocks when it comes to getting other people to pronounce their names correctly. Let's hear from them.
Alan Baltodano. Alan Baltodano. But I usually like Alan. Some people I'll correct, and some people I won't. I just let it ride. Those that know better, you know, and I say, hey, don't, it's Alan, not Alan, or, you know, they misspell it too with double L's, E-N, and it's A-L-A-N.
Well, I'd always written it. I always kept my name, but I would just say, you know, my name is New Thing, but you can call me Patty, is what I used to say. And then I realized, I guess I kind of came into like a racial consciousness, you know, where I realized that the reason that I was doing that was to make it easier for people that couldn't pronounce it. But then I was sacrificing a bit of myself, you know, in the process. I was sacrificing a bit of who I was. And so I think I just realized that was important to take back. It's interesting because then I, in a way, I'm very grateful when I am talking with people who are Vietnamese, because then they can say my name. And it's, you know, it's a very interesting, it's almost like, it's like a very real reminder that you're in a different community, almost.
Usually I say Gerardo just because it's easier for people to remember and say that. I don't really have a preference. A lot of my friends actually call me Hera, which is short for Gerardo. But it doesn't really make a difference to me. The only name I really don't like is Jerry. Usually when I'm introducing myself to someone that I know speaks Spanish, I say Gerardo, because if I say Gerardo, a lot of the time they're like, do you mean Gerardo? And it's like this awkward like, oh yeah, like you can say it, you know. But usually when I'm meeting somebody for the first time I've never met, it's Gerardo.
Talking about mispronunciation of names and people with difficult to pronounce names, difficult that is by, I guess what you would call, I'll put difficult in quotation marks, because it may be difficult to you in terms of a matter of opinion, but it's a common reaction for people who have names that are difficult for others to pronounce, that when they introduce themselves, they get a quizzical look, or maybe a question, how do you say that again, and so forth, and we're trying to really talk about what that all means. We've got Aretha Coley with us in studio, who's assistant professor of elementary education. She'll be at UC Riverside in the fall and with us by phone. Aretha Basin. Aretha Coley, I just wanted to get you on record here about you were talking about really sensitivity to a lot of the history of this microaggression and so forth, which certainly for teachers is important. But what's it best for teachers to do here? I would imagine just go over the name until they get it right so they don't embarrass the child or themselves.
Right. And I think that's part of it. I think part of it is owning the issue, right? So when we tell a student, this is your name is difficult to pronounce, instead of saying that it's difficult for me to pronounce, you are shifting the burden onto the student, which we need to have teachers reclaim that. So the first, you know, I identify three main things that I think teachers can do. One is recognizing the Eurocentric bias in the curriculum.
Some European process. Names that are hard to pronounce too, though.
True. But I think for students of color, this is while many all students who have names that are not commonly used in Western culture here, Anglo-Western culture, this is a particular issue for students of color in the work that we're doing as a racial microaggression, because there are so many other factors in school that are racialized, that there are these hierarchies. So curriculum bias and the lack of teachers of color. And so students, this is one additional factor that creates this broader impact. So really understanding that bias and having a culturally responsive pedagogy is one thing that teachers can do. The second...
Because some parents want their kids to be assimilated. I mean, they think, oh, this is good. They've got an American nickname or whatever, and they're not necessarily adverse to it, or in some cases the kids aren't that adverse to it.
Well, I think we also have to look at the power dynamics that exist between schools and parents. So if we're talking about working class communities, a lot of times parents don't feel the ability or agency to challenge things that teachers are saying or giving them, right? And so in the study we have a student whose teacher decided he couldn't say the student's name, so he named him after himself. And then that stuck, and all the kids at the school started calling their home and saying, instead of saying Nit, then they're saying, hey, can we talk to Frank? And his parents said, there's no one here that lives by that. But eventually they had to accept it. And now this man is now a lawyer and still goes by that name. And so there are these moments that happen that are just arbitrary experience for a teacher. It may be one moment that they may not think about again that have impact over the entire life.
You're really talking
students.
About cultural sensitivity here on the teacher's part, largely, or racial sensitivity.
Yeah, and I think that the teachers should do the work of identifying that this is their issue and expanding their cultural limits too. You know, some of I wrote this article, so now everyone looks to me to pronounce names correctly all the time, and that's a lot of pressure. I know that, you know, there are phonetic differences between languages that make things a challenge at times, but it's about expanding our cultural limits. If someone is going to be your student for an entire school year, it's important that you are trying, as Ritha was saying. And then just the last thing is just honoring the power that teachers have over the sense of self and worldviews of students. So really taking that influence seriously and recognizing that while you may not be the root cause of some of these issues, you're in a position to challenge and help students feel a positive sense of self and celebratory. The tone you set in the classroom impacts the way that other students are going to react as well.
Well, Yang Suk Choi is an illustrator and author of a book called The Name Jar. It's a children's book. It's about a new student from Korea who plans to adopt a new name but chooses instead her original Korean name. Yang Suk Choi, good to have you with us. Good morning.
Thank you for having me.
And I did pronounce your name correctly, I believe, didn't I?
Yes, Yang Suk Choi. Yes. Thank you.
Okay. This actually, your book is being used fairly widely in a number of schools. And what do you hope kids will glean from your book, or how in what ways is it best used by teachers?
The struggle for the acceptance of oneself and one's own difference in comparison to others is something we all go through, and children can see that they are different from one another, but can also be open to other cultures and be accepted.
And what kind of success have you found just from, you know, reading The Name Jar in terms of getting teachers and students more aware of this?
I mean, personally, I became fascinated by stories behind the name. I know that many Chinese and Korean students getting themselves English names in order to fit in, or if they do use their given names, they sometimes allow teachers and students to mispronounce them. But if you ask children questions like, are you happy with your name? Would you rather have a different name? Ever wonder why you have the name you do? Then you can see that a name can be a great teaching resource to learn perhaps about a person's origins, social roles, or cultures, or even perspectives.
Again, Yang Suk Choi is an author and illustrator. Her book is The Name Jar, a children's book about a new student from Korea who plans to adopt a new name but instead chooses her original Korean name. And Yang Suk Choi, thank you for joining us on Forum. Glad to have you. Glad to have you, our listeners. In fact, let me invite you to join us. Certain there are many of you who have stories or would like to bring your own opinions to bear on this whole subject about pronouncing names and the trouble with pronouncing names and what it all means. Our toll-free number is available. It's 866-733-6786. Actually, it's not available right now. All the lines are buzzing, but you can join us at that number when a line becomes available. It's 866-733-6786. Other ways to communicate with us, of course, email us, forum@kqed.org, or post any questions or comments right onto our website, kqed.org/forum, and click on the segment. There is a line available now, by the way, 866-733-6786. You can also tweet us. Our Twitter handle is @KQEDForum, and you can go to our Facebook page and communicate with us in that way. And we'll hear from you, our listeners, when we return. I think John Travolta could have used a lesson on this score when he mispronounced the name in the Oscars this year. I mentioned Diana Ross, that was a few years ago, but just this past year, Travolta made a mispronunciation, and you may have too. And what do you think? Does it bother you? We'll hear from you when we return. I'm Michael Krasny. This is Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. We're talking with Ritha Kohli, a Assistant Professor of Elementary Education, and Ritha Basin of Basin Consulting and Mavoko, all about names and mispronouncing names and the trouble with mispronunciation of names. And going to bring our callers into this. Let me first read some comments that are coming in on the website. Listener writes, the opposite effect exists when Americans travel to Asian countries. Western names are hard to pronounce to non-English speaking folks, but I have not seen Americans changing their names when they move to a non-English speaking country. I wonder if this is a reflection of how accepting the Western world is of other cultures. That being said, I think unless non-Americans stop changing their names, Americans aren't going to have the opportunity to even try and enrich their vocabularies to include ethnic names. So please stop changing your names. And Richard writes, my sister's given name, names are Darren, D-E-R-Y-N, pronounced Darren, Charisse, and Darren is Welsh for bird. Many years ago, she changed the spelling to D-E-R-Y-N-N-E because when she applied for jobs, people did not know it was a man or a woman's name, although I still use the old spelling because I know. The one huge advantage of a strange or difficult name is that you can use it as is for your email address. And by the way, I should mention that one of the things that surprised me most in my research for this program was the fact that if, like, the name Michelle, if it has an extra L, or the name Philip, if it has an extra L, or the name Sarah, if it has an extra H as opposed to just S-A-R-A, means less income, supposedly, less earning income for people who have those extra letters. One extra letter costs you about $3,600 a year, according to one social scientist who did the research on this. Here's a tweet. Why do people have such issues with African-American names, even in international areas where people with such diverse names? And here's Griselda, who writes on Facebook. I've been called Manila, Giselle, Griselda. I just say G at coffee shops. Also, good luck finding personalized mugs or keychains. Actually, there's a whole article about using different names. Svati Kirsten wrote this in the New York Times about using different names at Starbucks. Let's go to your calls, and let's begin with Anand from San Jose. Help me pronounce your name.
Program. My name is Anand. It's A-N-A-N-D.
Okay.
And this issue is very near and dear to my heart. I only have a five-letter last name, as you can tell. And I would agree with your callers and with the general study that while I make the effort to educate people on how to say the name, and most of these names you have to understand, at least in the Indian context, is they're not English names. The sounds are not native to the English language. And so while they may look English, they've been transcribed to English. So the sounds are what they need to get properly. And even if you can get them to say the name, I don't think most people remember. Or a lot of people do. I mean, some people do, some people don't. And the real trouble is getting people to remember the name. And, you know, other names are easier for people to remember. And, I mean, I understand you're in a different place. And most of your names don't sound like somebody pointed out, one of your hosts pointed out, why can't you have a regular name like a Lizzie or Bob? I understand it's different, but when you're working with so many people, it really helps to be able to say the name correctly.
Yeah, let me bring Ritha Basin back into this. Ritha Basin, comment from you?
Well, it's interesting. I was thinking back to the comment that was made by one of the people you heard from about the people with harder-to-pronounce names should not change their names to help those in America with easy-to-pronounce names when they go abroad and can then therefore learn about the experience of the pains of having harder-to-pronounce names. I call that name privilege. Just like any other experience of being part of the dominant culture where it becomes part of our normative value structure that we don't have the challenge or the burden or have to wear the backpack, if you will, of having to deal with name mispronunciation, the experience is then, well, if your name is harder to pronounce, maybe you should be adjusting your name to make it easier for us. Or I don't understand why this is such a big deal. Or what's are you being oversensitive, Ritu? And not even feeling that their names would be harder to pronounce. So, for example, I remember I once met a man named Josh, who was talking to me about Mivoko, and he said to me, "Oh well, you know, the Ritus of the world will need help with name pronunciation, but someone like myself, Josh, I don't need any help." And it was interesting for me because to me that reflected this idea of name privilege, which is that he clearly doesn't understand. He's viewing it through a very American-centric lens that everyone around the world will say his name exactly as it is pronounced here, J-O-S-H, Josh. And I pointed out to him that if you were abroad, for example, in South Asia, that your name would not be pronounced Josh, it would be pronounced Josh, and which is a very common word in the Indian culture. And it was a very eye-opening or illuminating moment for him because he had never turned to it to view it through that experience.
There are actually some cultures that don't even have that sh sound in them. You know, I mean, some languages.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Like in the Latino experience, you'd say Josh. So I think that we really, like any attempt to be inclusive and to respect other people's cultures and identities, I think what needs to happen is we need to turn on the cultural light bulb here and start paying attention to other people's experiences with their names and their identities. And right now, most of us don't have that cultural light bulb on. We're viewing everyone else's experiences through our own lens of what's happening with us.
All right, I want to bring more callers on here, and let me go to Henry in Mountain View. Good morning, Henry.
Good morning, Michael. A couple of points. Number one, I think that one of the reasons that people remember or have less difficulty with, you know, their native names is that we have, for years, we've all been exposed to a base of these names, and it sets it up in our brains, so it's a lot easier to remember Joe than it is, you know, Anand or Anand. And the second point is that memorizing names is tough. But just American names. So I think it is harder. And if there are some tools you can use to help with just remembering names, and one is that there's apps out there. There's one called NameRec that I use, and when you meet someone, you put in their name, and then it flashes up on your phone periodically to remind you, and that repeated repetition helps you remember. The third thing is, and I think this is really important for people who are non-native, I am appalled, actually, at not only non-native, but native folks that don't enunciate their names. And just in the course, I do a lot of work on the phone, and it's just astounding to me how many people do not enunciate properly. And if you really haven't enunciated your name, it's really hard to expect, not really reasonable to expect that the person on the other end is going to, you know what your name is. So I think there is especially a responsibility by non-native speakers to really focus on enunciating their name very, very carefully.
Yeah, thank you for those suggestions. Appreciate hearing from you and Aretha Coley.
So I'd like to disrupt this notion or this binary between American and non-American names. I was born in Dayton, Ohio. I am South Asian American, and my name is Rita. My children are third generation, and their names are Asha Devi and Anaya Shanti. So these are, you know, this idea that American versus non-American, you know, it's still privileging a particular dominant culture. And so really trying to understand that that the country that we live in is, especially if we're talking about native Nahuatl names or other indigenous names, you know, we have to really, we're still struggling to embrace those kinds of ideas. There's a great skit by Key and Peele about a substitute teacher who's African-American and goes into a white suburb, and he's trying to do roll call, and he is just really struggling with these typical, in quotes, white names. And I think that really helps to turn this idea on its head of what exactly are we normalizing and what exactly are we privileging, even in this discussion right now.
Well, now here's a sobering message from a listener who writes on our website. My last name is Young. I've spent my whole life explaining it, Young, opposite of old. If my very simple name confuses people, God help everyone else. Marcy writes, I had this issue my whole life and finally went to court and changed my first name. It was a huge relief, especially when traveling and waiting for the TSA or passport control person to mispronounce my name. Not their fault, but still painful. My given name was spelled Marcali and was meant to be pronounced Marcili. But the soft S, the soft C doesn't follow a consonant, which possibly my family didn't realize. Perhaps family should have guidance when naming their offspring. Heather writes, I teach online, so students often don't see a picture of me. I noticed that when my name changed after marriage from a very mainstream name to a Chinese last name, more students commented about how well organized I was, how hardworking I was, stereotyping Asian qualities, and in contrast, too, for some, that I was short in my responses, too abrupt, etc., again, stereotyping. As well, students often would say, I'm not sure what you mean, as if English was my second language. It was clear that much of this was a projection of a Chinese name stereotyping versus actually what was represented in my transactions with them. Very curious. Wonder if there are studies about online transactions and perceptions in terms of names. Yeah, actually, there are. And we've been talking about something. You did an article on this, in fact, Ritha?
Yeah, and my research is not about online transactions at all, but about people's reflections on their experiences in schools. I do know that there is a lot of research that shows that when people call for housing, in terms of housing discrimination, what their name is or how they speak has an impact on how they're treated. So I can imagine that in response to that, that definitely how you're being perceived impacts, it evokes stereotypes for people.
Yeah, and Ritha Bassoon, excuse me.
So there's a lot of research that talks about how when your name is harder to pronounce, people are less likely to want to connect with you, socialize with you. And I think it has a lot to do with, it may have something to do with you, and as was mentioned earlier, blind spots or bias around who you are and your identity. But I also think it has a lot to do with people wanting to be nice and kind and polite, and this feeling that I might say your name wrong will make me look bad, and therefore I will tend to avoid you. And so I think there's a few things at play here. There's unconscious bias and conscious bias, conscious awareness that I'm treating you less favorably because of your name. And then there's the I don't want to offend and feel bad myself. But one thing that I think is interesting, and one of the callers raised this point of how people who have harder to pronounce names, especially when you're, I suppose, not born and raised in North America, the onus is on you to enunciate your name clearly. You know, I think that idea is really an interesting one. If you ask me and other people who have names that are indigenous to other countries outside of North America, I would say to you, I am enunciating my name. I'm enunciating my name very clearly. It's that my name is harder for you to pick up because it's not common to your ear. But I am doing my part in enunciating. So what I need you to do is meet me in learning my name by you asking if there's parts of it or aspects of it that are hard to understand. And I think historically we have been in a place where those of us with harder to pronounce names, or names that are harder to pronounce here in North America, there's been a small group of us. But given that we are growing as a population and that even our social and business interactions are growing into a global experience, this idea that everyone else should enunciate better for me really will have to fall by the wayside. And we as individuals will need to be more proactive in learning how to say other people's names.
Yeah, but I'm looking at a web comment here from a listener who writes, I think it's, this is Judy, she says, I think it's just common courtesy to pronounce a person's name the way it's supposed to be pronounced, period. By not trying, one is basically saying the other person's identity doesn't matter. You both agree with that, I presume.
I agree with that, yeah. Absolutely.
Another listener who writes, I'm a woman named Marion, which I often have to repeat for people to get, Marilyn, Marianne. Also, it's the man spelling. Marian being the spelling for a woman. I was assigned to the men's dorm when I was a freshman at Cal, got a draft notice, but it's a nice name and I wouldn't think of changing it. Actually, I had a girlfriend many years ago whose name was Marian. Her father nicknamed her Chicky, and that stuck, that became her name. Another listener writes, what about overpronouncing foreign names in English? You know, like on NPR's Latino USA, for example, how they pronounce Spanish names with the Spanish accent, but ignore all other language pronunciations. Like, I don't think Maria Hinosa is going to pronounce Frankfurter with a German accent. Is that a microaggression against Anglos? I think, I remember Rico Chacon would say it's Rico Chacon from San Jose. You know, I mean, there's this sense of pronouncing Latin names correctly that may not necessarily translate to, you don't say Volkswagen or Frankfurter like the listener says.
Yeah, I mean, I think that, you know, we live in at least a state where there's a large Spanish-speaking population. And so I think, you know, the awareness around Spanish and accents relating to the correct pronunciation of Spanish might becoming more prominent in mainstream spaces like media and news and other things. I think it becomes less frequent. You know, when you talk about bilingual teachers, so often those programs are also even framed just through the lens of Spanish. And we have, you know, plenty of Tagalog, Vietnamese, Punjabi speakers in California who don't even have teachers that reflect their language or people on campus who would even know how to say their name coming through the door. And so I think what happens is when you have little children who are coming in who don't have the tools or agency to advocate for themselves, we end up, I think, more likely to adopt those names when we are part of smaller communities. And, you know, I think Ritu's app, it sounds really fascinating. I was talking to my husband last night, who's a school administrator, about how amazing it would be to use that app in a school setting where parents or kids could say their names as part of the attendance rosters. And so we could actually learn those pronunciations.
You're getting a little blowback here, though. Let me read an email from someone named Misa who says, it's unfortunate your guest is throwing around terms like racial microaggression when some poor soul is simply mispronouncing a name. I even hear NPR announcers mispronounce non-English words. Would she perhaps consider that one element here is simply the well-known perception and fact of native English speakers being monolingual and uncomfortable with foreign languages? I wonder if, say, people in European countries have as much difficulty with pronouncing unfamiliar names.
Yeah, and I would say that, you know, when we individualize the issue, I don't think that someone saying someone's name incorrectly is necessarily malicious or is necessarily has malintent. But I think part of it is we have to understand the consequence that it takes for students of color when they're in schooling systems that they are not reflected in the curriculum. They're not reflected by the teachers. They have less resources. This is one additional way in which they're being othered. And it happens so often, and it takes this toll on them where they are actually starting to resent. In the study we did, we found that adults who are reflecting on their childhood experience began to resent their language, began to resent their culture, began to resent their family, feel ashamed of it, feel embarrassed by it, feel burdened by it. And so that, in a sense, is why we're calling this a racial microaggression. It's something subtle. I did this work in collaboration with Dr. Daniel Solorzano, who's a professor at UCLA. So I hadn't mentioned that yet, but I wanted to make sure that was there.
Get your props in here. Let me get another caller in here, too. And that's Paola. Good morning.
Good morning, Michael. It's actually Paola.
Paola. And, me disculpa. Lo siento.
Hey, so I came here when I was 2.5. So what we're talking about right now is perfect because I'm bicultural. And as a child, everyone called me Paula. And it was really hard to adapt. I mean, I found myself in the middle. At home, I was Paola. It was a very Spanish Latin culture. And I went to school. It was an English culture that had nothing to do with my culture. So being bicultural was really hard for me as a child because I didn't fit anywhere. It wasn't until I was in college and I, you know, kind of finally was able to mature enough to kind of, you know, hold myself and accept myself for who I am and where I came from that I am very firmly Paola. And so for children, if your name isn't respected, it's really harder to assimilate. And I think what your guest is doing is reminding people that when we come here as immigrants, everyone wants us to assimilate. By respecting people's names, you're helping them assimilate in this country and accept them for who they are.
Yeah, I think that's a point worth making, and I'm glad you made it. Thank you for the call. Let me go right on to another caller, and that's Ricardo. Good morning. Ricardo, you're on the air. Is Ricardo there? No? Okay, then we go on to, I don't want to mispronounce this name, Jutika?
Yes, it's Jutika.
Jutika, hi.
My name is Jutika. So I try to, when people have trouble pronouncing it, I try to write it down and read it along with them. But I have been told by somebody that there is no such name. It has to be Jessica, and arguing with me that my parents didn't know how to spell my name. I come from India, so most of them want to call me Jessica, but I insist they learn to say Jyothika. And my daughter is Indrani, and now her name has changed into, her friends are calling her Drone. And we laugh about it, but when somebody tells me that I don't know how to spell my own name, that I find very insulting.
It is insulting. And hold your ground with your names, and thank you for the call. Some comment, Rita Basin, from you?
It's so interesting. I repeatedly will have people say things like to me when I say my name is Ritu, they'll respond back, but there's no H in your name, so there must be a spelling mistake, or maybe, as though this is very helpful for me, maybe you should add an H to the spelling of your name to help everyone pronounce your name properly. And
you'd make $3,600 less a year if you added a letter.
Right? But what I wanted to do is just shed some light on what the lived experience is in the workplace when your name is harder to pronounce, because we've talked a lot about the experiences in the classroom, which I think is so important because it shows the adverse impact of, in an education setting, which then, of course, lays the foundation for your experiences at work. What we know around the research in the workplace is that something as simple as your name being looking as though you are from a country outside of Canada or the U.S. will have an impact on whether you'll be called in for an interview. And so you'll have heard of a lot of research done around the same resume. The one name has more of a white American historical bent to it. The other has a name that looks African American or has a name that's outside of North America. And same resume sent out for job postings. And, of course, the white American application gets more callbacks. So right from the resume process to being interviewed to the lived experience of when work is being allocated on teams, when your name is harder to pronounce, the research suggests that you're less likely to get quality work and then get quality review feedback and then to advance. And it has a lot to do with the fact that it's a discomfort around difference. It's discomfort around, I can't connect with you because I can't even say your name right. I feel uncomfortable approaching you because if I'm going to say your name wrong, it will offend you and then you won't like me, and more importantly, I'll feel awful, so I'll just avoid you. And so there's a lived experience happening within the workplace that we are not talking about enough to that is having an adverse impact on whether you're white American, black American, you're Asian, Native American, it's having an adverse impact. Then the other thing that I think if we were to talk about dollars and cents is this idea that as we're doing more global business, for organizations that want to capture more of this excellent client experience, especially if you think about all the business that's done over the phone and outreaching, whether it's inbound or outbound sales, the second I pick up the phone and someone says, hi, is Retobation there? I know you're a telemarketer and I don't want to speak with you. So what is the missed opportunity to connect better with clients and customers that's not being addressed as well in this context?
Well, I've got a few emails I want to read here and then get to more of your calls. This is from Vanita, who says, I can relate to this topic in many ways, being a South Asian myself. My name is quite simple to pronounce, Vanita. However, my husband's name is Vishwanath, which means Lord of the World, and another name for Lord Shiva in Indian mythology. I would think this is a very simple, though long, name to pronounce. So some of his colleagues in the USA decided to shorten that to Vish, which means poison in most Indian languages. And I refused to call him that, even when referring to him to his colleagues in social settings. But now I have no choice because they only know a Vish, not a Vishwanath. And I think it's going to be a really hard journey back to Vishwanath if we choose to make it. Another listener says, I think the assumption that only foreign names are difficult is silly. My husband's name is Sean, and you'd be amazed how many people can neither spell nor say his fairly common name correctly. Speak clearly and slowly when introducing yourself. I find when I use a word that ends in a consonant before my name, which starts with a vowel, the consonant sound gets added to my name. Separate your name from other noise. Renee writes, as a public school teacher with a hyphenated last name, I make a special effort to learn to pronounce each student's name, especially if that student comes from a different ethnic group than I do. In return, I expect my students to pronounce my full last name, telling them that I honor both of my parents by representing my feminist mother's last name and my father's together, and that because I have learned their names, they should learn my full last name. I kind of cringe when teachers just say, call me Miss PG. You'd be amazed what people have done through the years, students with the name Krasny, by the way. Here's April, who writes on Facebook, my first name, people call me Amy, Alice and even Rachel. My last name people call see the Yama and just plaster Gucci, thanks to Christy, or Moto. My name is pronounced Yamaichi. And even when spelling out my name, people will recant the spelling starting with an E or a W. Worst spelling on junk mail is Yamanuki. Well, the worst I got was Mr. Crazy once. It was actually from Ford Motors. Here's Rucker. It says, what a relevant show. I'm a woman in my 30s with a double unusual name. My first name is Rucker, and surname is a very common first name. I've learned a few things navigating the world with this name. One, it's a fantastic cocktail party conversation as to the origin. Two, the onus is on me to provide a helpful mnemonic, preferably with a strong visual so others can remember. I say it's Rucker, like trucker, without the T. And three, I continue to be shocked at how many full-fledged adults try to persuade me that my name must be backwards. In other words, how people choose to react to my unusual name really shines the light on who they are and how they see the world. And we'll bring another caller in, and that's a caller from Wilmington, North Carolina. Lupin, morning.
Hi. My name is originally spelled with an E at the end, so people would pronounce it Lupine. And it's a wildflower, which, depending on where you are from, you may or may not be familiar with. And, of course, since the evolution of Harry Potter, everyone knows the name Lupin now. But I was born and raised in northern New Mexico, where I was one of the only non-Hispanic, non-Catholic kids in elementary school. And it was a really challenging gauntlet. I guess the microaggression is really an interesting concept for me to think about, because there was almost no attempt to sort of find out how to say my name, and sometimes it was Guadalupe, Lupe, or as in Guadalupe. But it's interesting just how isolated you become when people don't know your name or don't use your name appropriately. Now that I'm grown up, no one forgets that they've met me, but as a child, I just wanted to be Amy.
Well, thank you for that. Actually, we got an email from our former producer, Kevin Guillory, who writes, I could write a book. Kevin, not Kevin, not Kevin, not Kevin, not Stephen, and Michael, I've been called Cleveland. Oy. And so it goes. Well, it's been a fascinating hour. You can continue this discussion online by going to kqed.org. I want to thank our two major guests for the hour, Aretha Coley and Rithu Basin, and also Yang Suk Choi, who also joined us, the author of The Name Jar. And we are here with you Monday through Friday, 9 to 11, and you can count on the fact that we repeat an hour, 10 to 11 in the evening. Forum's producers are Judy Campbell, Irene Noguchi, and Tina Larberg. Our engineer is Danny Bringer. And thanks, by the way, once again, to Mariam Jamil, who had a great deal to do with this program. And thanks to all of you. We wouldn't be here without you. And for all of us here at KQED, I'm Michael Krasny.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation.